to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to this very special episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you're joining us for the very first time, welcome home. This will be especially relevant for you if you're really looking to find your purpose and you're not sure of your direction. Today, I'm interviewing Genevieve Petturo, the founder of the Pajama Program. Genevieve's story will inspire you and may even bring you to tears as she shares her journey from corporate to being a guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show and everything that has happened in between. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Genevieve.
Thank you, Deborah. It's lovely to be here with you.
I'm so excited to interview you. We have a mutual friend in common, Ruchi Pinniger, and she has shared with me so much about the benefit she has received from volunteering with the Pajama Program board. And you have an amazing story to share from going from television marketing to founding the Pajama Program. Share with our listeners what your pivotal moment was when you knew you had a bigger calling.
Sure. I'd be happy to. You know, I never in a million years thought I'd start a nonprofit. That was not something that was ever on my mind. You know, I volunteered here and there. I was a Girl Scout, but I wanted to climb the corporate ladder. To me, that was success. I wanted to be that single girl reaching the top floor. I wanted to be in the entertainment business, and I wanted it to be in a big city. So for me, that was New York City. And I grew up watching Mary Tyler Moore, so I think that was that was my role. She was my role model.
Oh, I wish I could remember the theme song, and I'm not a good singer, so I won't break out into song. But I think
you can make it after all.
That's right. That's right. You're going to make it after all.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, that was ingrained in me as a success for a woman. And I was the firstborn of four. My dad came from Italy when he was 16 on a boat with his father so that he could have an American, you know, experience and have a family here and, you know, give us more than he could have in Italy. So there, I felt that they really wanted me to get married and have children, give them grandchildren. But that wasn't my plan. So I got over it. It took a while. I was climbing the corporate ladder and 12 years in, I was doing well. I had what I thought, you know, what Mary had, what I wanted, a successful business. And I was VP marketing, working in New York City. I had a really pretty co-op in New York area. And one day in my pretty apartment, I heard this voice and it came from inside me. And it asked me clearly, if this is the next 30 years of your life, is this enough?
Mm.
And Deborah, that really stopped me, just stopped me cold. I was really nervous because I'd never heard that, but it probably was trying to speak to me. But with all the, you know, the chatting in my head that we all have, I didn't hear it. But in that moment, I heard that question loud and clear. And it took seconds for me to realize what it was.
That's amazing. You and I are contemporaries. We grew up in the same era. And, you know, I know that that path of our parents, you know, or their parents came to this country, they made their way in the world. And our path was to go get a job and work in a job for the rest of your life and make money and buy a house and raise a family. That was what was expected of us. So I'm wondering what happened before that. Like, was it a sense of burnout? Where did that question come from? Were you actively seeking your purpose in that moment?
No, I wasn't. At least not consciously. I loved my job. I thought, you know, working all day, being a workaholic, traveling, being the first one in, the last one to leave, having friends that were all in the business. I thought that was, you know, a really good deal for me, you know, from where I came from. I was never a popular girl. I was a nerd. And I just thought, wow, this is okay. I can get used to this. But I guess there was something simmering subconsciously, because I don't think that would have come out to inside me if it wasn't somewhere in my heart.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's you had a sexy career, you know, you were traveling, you were living it up. And, you know, for that to happen, what was the next thing after you had the question of, is this what's going to be for the next 30 years? And is this enough? What happened next?
You know, I realized that I didn't have children in my life, and that there might have been something to my parents' dreams for me. And I was 38. So I felt like, well, I don't know that I would have children now, you know, run out, find somebody who wanted to have children and, you know, and put that on my list. So I said, I have to find a way to bring children into my life. And I started to remember the children's pictures I'd seen in the paper, the stories I'd heard in the news about how children were abandoned and abused and taken to emergency shelters. And I thought, how do I find these? And let me call the police. I saw, you know, I figured police would know. So they did know. They said there are shelters where we take them, where social workers take them 24 hours a day when we get a call. And they gave me a couple of places. So the biggest one was a city-run one. And I called a few places and I literally asked them if I could come and read at night. I said, I'm a nice person. Can I come and read to the children that you have there who are sleeping there until you find a home for them? And they said what they said before 9/11 was, you sound like a nice person. Sure, come on. And it was just this gift. And I was excited, and all week I take a long lunch and leave early and go buy children's books. You know, I was out of the, you know, that whole world of what children were reading. So I asked librarians and bookstores, and I had sacks of books. I went and I had a business suit on, and they brought me to this room and told me to, you know, sit down. But there weren't any chairs. There were small chairs for kids. So I sat on the floor. And in moments, I saw at the door these little faces, you know, timid. They were told to come in, and slowly they walked in. They saw me sitting on the floor and they sat on the floor with me. I didn't know what to expect. This was not my world. And I was really embarrassed and felt so awkward that I had no clue what to expect. But they were so quiet, the children, and you could see the way that they were dressed and their manner, that some of them had been through such trauma. And of course, I wasn't privy to that, but you could tell. And they were so quiet for the entire 45 minutes. I read story after story, showing them the pictures. And I never felt more grounded and more centered. So a few times in, I decided to follow where they were taking them to go to sleep when I finished reading. And when I peered into that room, I saw cots and futons, and children were being helped up, sometimes more than one, to a surface. They had nothing to change into. Some of them were crying. There wasn't there wasn't a parent or a caregiver that was personally related to the children. The staff were really nice, lovely. But what I saw were flashes of my mom at our bedside. I have a sister and two brothers. And that was so warm and loving and happy. And I just remembered the stories and the giggling and the, you know, the juice and the pajamas, of course, pajamas. And there weren't any pajamas. And I don't know why that was what I asked. I asked, can I bring some pajamas next week? And the staff thought that was a nice idea. And I did. And when I started handing them out after I read the stories, one little girl, she must have been six or so, and I could tell she had been through something horrible. Her hair was a mess. Her clothes were dirty. He was crying off and on during the reading. He was just so quiet. And when I went to give her a pair that I thought would fit her, she just shook her head just so strongly. I said, no, no, no. She was afraid. And, you know, I've learned later why they're afraid of taking something, taking a gift. But I didn't know then. And I kept trying. And finally, she whispered in my ear, what are pajamas?
Oh.
And that was the end of my career and the beginning of this new obsession.
It's so, you know, I have chills when I hear you tell the story. And, you know, it can't help but bring up a lot of empathy. And for me, it was tears just experiencing that with you through the book. And I want to mention to everyone here that there is a book that you have written called Passion, Purpose, and Pajamas. And that is such a great story. It's a great memoir, but it's also inspiration for others who are looking to find their purpose. And, you know, from this simple desire, this being in tune with your inner guidance system that says, you know, is this what you want to be doing? Is this where you want to be in 30 years? Is this okay? Is this enough? And then having this inspiration out of nowhere, it seems, to look for shelters, read books, and then the awareness of that bedtime routine, that comfort that we take for granted in many ways when we're more privileged and we have more comfort in our lives, and to bring that experience to those children, you know, and have that experience of giving and seeing that transformation. So what was it over time as you did this more and more? Did you expand the number of shelters that you visited? What did you notice in the children that had the stories and got the pajamas?
Yes, I went to more and more because I really lost interest in my day job. It really went out the window because I was feeling so connected to these little children, and I'd never expect to be obsessed, which is the best word I can use for it. So yes, so I went to more, and the staff would tell their friends who were staff at other shelters, there's this lady with pajamas, she'll come and read and she'll give you pajamas. So I was getting calls, and you know, at work then you really couldn't be free to answer your cell phone, and it was big. So I was constantly hiding because I couldn't miss a call from a shelter telling me about the children and, you know, having to run out and get pajamas as soon as I could. So it really was an obsession. And I really thought it would just be my personal hobby, my personal obsession. But I met a great guy about that time. And, you know, the universe works in mysterious ways. I wanted to be that single girl, and I was that single girl climbing the corporate ladder. And I think the universe said, you're going to need some help. You might need a confidant and a really great partner and a wonderful man. And he's also going to be your driver everywhere. You don't have a car.
And what was this wonderful man's name?
Yeah, Demo. My husband, Demo.
Demo is a gem. As I read that story, as I read your book, he is just such a godsend. I mean, to have such unconditional support must have at least made it easier for you.
Yes, but I tell him all the time, because if you read my book, Purpose, Passion, and Pajamas, it's a true story. It's not all nice. You know, I'm very honest with the hard parts, the trouble I got into financially, the trouble I brought on our marriage, and all through it, you know, obviously it turned out well. But I kept telling him when I was obsessed and he couldn't get my attention, and I just wasn't that partner that he deserved and that promised, you know, at the altar to be. And I would always tell him, because when I first started to think this could be more than just a guy I'm dating, I said, I better tell him that I might not be part of a two-income family because I don't see how I'm going to ever make any money doing this pajama thing. And I told him pretty much that. And I said, I'm thinking about quitting my career, whatever. I don't know what's next for me. And he said, go for it. So I reminded him all through the bad times, you said, go for it.
So let's talk about some of those challenges, because, you know, it can, you know, at a surface level, it looks like, you know, just everything accelerated for you. You know, the pieces came together so quickly. I remember the part where, what was it, Parenting Magazine wrote a little blurb.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Oh, my God. Tell everyone what that was like.
Sure. Oh, my goodness. All I could do was, you know, spend money on pajamas and books, more than I had, racking up the credit cards, you know, just ignoring the calls for payment because I had to buy another, you know, two dozen for the next day. So all of that was a real burden. And I teach finding your purpose. And I'm all about purpose in work and purposeful leadership. And I'm the jump in and splash around till you figure it out kind of gal. But I also talk about the smarter ways to do it if you have the patience. And sometimes it's a slide into your life, you know, if you can't make that jump. But the universe has a way of trying to make it work along your natural way. And so, thankfully, the support started to come from, now I didn't tell anyone because I had my job. So nobody knew why I was yawning. Nobody knew why I wasn't coming in at 6 a.m. I was coming in just by 9. Nobody knew why I was taking a long lunch or leaving at 5, but I was shopping. So
they thought you were having some illicit affair or some,
that's what I said, yeah.
Wild social life.
Yeah, I was juggling. And I have a chapter in my book, you know, Leave Juggling to the Clowns, because it must be what a person cheating on their spouse feels like. Oh, I got this covered. Nobody notices. Yeah. But one day I got a call from a woman reporter for a writer for Parenting Magazine. And she'd heard that I was bringing pajamas to children in shelters. And she said, are you this lady who's bringing these pajamas to shelters? And I said, yes. And she said, can we write a little article? Not much, but just a little. And I said, okay, sure. So she interviewed me. And that was that. So it was supposed to run, but it was just before 9/11. And when 9/11 happened everywhere, especially in New York, where we were, everything stopped. And she actually called and said, we don't know when we're going back to press, what state the world is in. So I'm sorry it's not running right now. So I said, okay, you know, because obviously I was worried too about the world.
Right.
1 year later, we were still all helping and loving each other. Anyone in New York remembers that. You could invite strangers in, you know, if you needed a meal, you need a bed. We just wanted to be close to each other.
Yeah.
She called and she said, we are running it. Sorry it took so long. We backlogged everything, but we are running it. It's going to be in the December/January double issue. I said, okay, great. I didn't know what to expect. Well, what I didn't know was the subscribers get it before it goes on the stands. So while I'm waiting for the 2 weeks when it's coming on the stands, I come home one day and my doorman is yelling and screaming at me, what am I doing? What are these boxes and packages? Did I start a business and didn't tell them? It's illegal. You can't do that here. And he's actually kicking all the boxes and throwing them in the elevator with me. And I am shocked. I don't know what's going on. So he sends me up and he says, send the elevator back down. And apparently there were thousands of boxes because they kept coming up in the elevator. So my husband came home. We got married. My husband came home and the same thing. They threw boxes in the elevator with him and yelled at him. When we started opening those boxes and reading those letters, talk about the tears and the heart opening tenfold. People received the magazine home and they couldn't act fast enough. Pajamas, books, cards, $5 bills, checks, notes. You can tell by handwritten notes that somebody gave their bread money. Oh, please give this to the children. Please buy another pair for the children. And it was just an amazing couple of weeks that they were just coming and we ate on the boxes. We couldn't find each other because they were up to the ceiling. And one box had one envelope had a letter from a corporation that said, please send us your 501c3 so we can give you a grant. And that's the moment I looked at my husband and I said, what is this 501C in a parentheses and the number 3? I had no idea what starting a nonprofit would be. I didn't know what a 501c3 was, but I knew that at that moment it was a responsibility and it wasn't just mine anymore. These people trusted me and I had, you know, I had to do whatever it took to make it legit and to make it happen.
You know, it was that realization that, oh my God, what I've stumbled upon here is so much bigger than me. And, you know, it was interesting for me as someone who likes to have control and have a roadmap and have a plan that your journey didn't come equipped with a roadmap. You really didn't know what to expect from one step to another. And yet it seems like you just flowed with that uncertainty. And when you were ready, then the next step unfolded. Right. So yes. When you start to file for the nonprofit, what were some of the biggest lessons that you learned during those early days of actually making this passion that you had an official entity?
I still hadn't told most people what I was doing because I didn't know what I was doing. And I realized I have to start somewhere. So I reached out to a friend who was also in the business and I just said, let's have drinks. And she said, okay, great. So I rehearsed what I was going to say. And every time I rehearsed it, it sounded ridiculous. I'm thinking of leaving my job to give pajamas and books to children in shelters. But that's what it was. And we met. Thank goodness I had a few sips of my wine. And I spelled it. And I said pretty much what I just said to you. And I said, they're mm-hmm. so sweet. I don't know what they've been through, but, you know, we read about them in the papers. And I stopped rambling because I heard myself and it really sounded ridiculous to a corporate person. And she said, why in the world would you want to do that? And
wow,
I was, of course, hoping she'd say, how sweet, count me in. But it was like a sucker punch. And you know what? I didn't have any answer. I just felt like I was just going to fall off the stool. I was hurt. I was embarrassed. I was annoyed. But I also felt like I wasn't prepared. And I said, why didn't I line up my cheerleaders? My husband's the only one who knows. And I said, let me talk to my family. Let me talk to people who are very close to me before I talk to somebody who is removed, because this really hurts and I don't have the answers. And I finally, you know, I talked to my mom and, you know, she's the reason for a pajama program because I knew what bedtime should be. And you know what she said? She said, I don't know how you'll do it either, but you're going to figure it out.
Oh, how beautiful. I mean, those tender early days of forming your business idea, because this passion to give children pajamas and have a soothing nighttime routine really led into a business endeavor. And those early days, it's so fragile and you have to surround yourself with the right people who will be supportive, be encouraging, and yet also have people around you who give you good advice, like the corporation on the 501c3. So what were some of the biggest lessons you learned in this journey? And how big is the pajama program today? Just to give our listeners a sense of where you started and where it is now.
Sure, sure. Well, we have delivered more than 7 million magical gifts, we say, of new pajamas and new books to children across the U.S. and Puerto Rico. And we have 63 chapters doing it across the U.S. So, you know, we celebrated 20 years officially since that 501c3 day. For me, it's a couple years more from just the, you know, doing it before we got our 501c3. So like I would never, ever have imagined. I write about the universe as your invisible partner. And I can't say enough about knowing when you take a major step and a change and trust that there's invisible help and support.
Absolutely. 100%. I think most of our listeners would agree too, that we're not operating on this plane all by ourselves, that there is help, there is support, and seeking to go inward in what is my purpose. You know, you and I share a similar journey there too. I remember thinking that, you know, is this all there is? Mm-hmm. And that was in my late 40s, early 50s, and going on silent meditation retreats to really listen deeply to what is it that I'm supposed to be doing. And once you get the calling, there's like no stopping. It becomes your obsession and your passion. So I'm curious, and I'm sure our listeners are wondering too, since I dropped the hint when we first started our conversation, is how did the Oprah Winfrey show happen?
I was sitting in our small reading center where we had children come in groups. We had volunteers read to them and give them pajamas and let them pick out a book. And usually there were children there or volunteers. And I was sitting by myself and the phone rang and I answered it. And the woman said, "Hello, I'm so-and-so, producer with the Oprah Winfrey Show. Do you have a minute?" And do I have a minute?
Do you have time for Oprah?
Right. Yeah, just a minute. And I remember I was in shock and I'm looking around like there's nobody to write on a piece of paper. It's Oprah Show. There's nobody. So I calmed myself and half of myself was speaking intelligently on the phone to this woman and half myself was jumping up and down trying to take me off course saying, "Do you know this is the Oprah Winfrey Show?" So half of my brain was speaking intelligently and answering her questions. And half of my brain was jumping up and down, reminding me, "Do you know this is the Oprah Winfrey Show calling? Oh my goodness, oh my goodness." And I managed to sort of keep that one out of my talk, that crazy voice. And I answered for 15 minutes all the questions. And then she said, "Okay, I'm going to call you back." Now, I told no one. This went on for a couple of weeks. She'd call, ask me questions. My two inside voices would be battling, but one that could speak well prevailed. And I kept answering her questions. Still, I told no one, not my husband, no one. You know, because you don't want to then have to tell someone, "Oprah Winfrey Show didn't pick me." So I didn't tell anyone until the final call. And I'll remember where I was on Madison Avenue in Manhattan for the rest of my life. And she said, "Okay, we're going to book you." And I said, "I'm going to be on the show." And she laughed and she said, "Yes." And I said, "Can I tell my husband?" And she laughed. She said, "You didn't tell him?" I said, "No." So they booked me and we flew in a snowstorm.
Oh my God.
And the plane was very delayed. And you have time for a story?
Yes.
Okay. So the plane was very delayed. Of course, I'm nervous thinking I'm going to miss my chance. My mother's telling me, "Don't worry, Oprah's going to send her plane." I don't think so. So the producer, the same woman, been with me from the beginning. She said, "Doesn't matter what time you get in, just call me and I'll tell you what to expect in the morning." So the plane took off. We landed safely in Chicago, went to the hotel and we got some soup and I called her and I said, "We're here." She said, "Okay, let me give you an update tomorrow. What's going to happen? We're picking you up in the car. You come to the studio. We'll take you to the green room. We'll do your makeup. You'll come. You're going to sit in the audience. Oprah is going to introduce you from your seat in the audience to everyone. You're going to stand up. You're going to walk on the stage and hop onto the stool next to Oprah."
Oh my God. You know, this is like every new entrepreneur's dream. I can't tell you how many people have started out and saying, "My goal is to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show or to be interviewed by Oprah." And you did it. What was that like? I mean, I will give a spoiler alert. I did watch the video clip of that show. It literally brought me to tears. So tell everyone what happened when you were sitting in that stool next to Oprah.
Well, I have to tell you, when she said, "And then you'll hop on the stool next to Oprah," I didn't hear much else because my brain was saying, in front of millions of people on TV, I'm hopping onto a stool in my high heels. And I said, "I'm going to fall flat on my face. Where's the couch?"
That's funny.
I couldn't sleep. I'm thinking, how do you hop on the stool gracefully?
But you did it. You somehow got there, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And I sat there and they started asking me questions, all the questions that they asked me as prep. But only after like four or five, she said, well, I have to tell you, we have a surprise. So I'm not going to ask you any more of those questions. And that's when I'll say, if you Google it, if you go to my website, mm-hmm. genevievefraturo.com, you can watch the show because it is a reveal that was so incredible. And the audience's TV loved it so much. They aired it three times over a year and a half.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I can only imagine what your apartment must look like now, because now you're getting thousands, tens of thousands, 100,000 boxes of pajamas or 100,000 pajamas or close to it. Where are you putting all that stuff? And
well,
how did you go from those early days of not really knowing what to do with the boxes in the apartment, you and Demo not being able to find each other, to actually having a thriving nonprofit that's 20 years old?
Well, let me tell you the story of boxes and the pajamas from Oprah, the show, and all the audience members. When the show was over, I had Terry, who came with me, who was working with me, and my husband and my mom. And when we finished and got off the show, they showed me all the pajamas that they couldn't even get on the stage. And I'm thinking, and Terry's thinking, oh, and the woman, the producer said, when you land back in New York, just email me the address to send them. So I'm thinking, they think we have a warehouse or something, because where the heck are we going to give, what address are we going to give them? So the entire ride home on the plane, we're thinking, who can we ask? Who has a warehouse? And it was really overwhelming to think of what would come next. But when we landed, there was a message from the producer that said, Oprah said, give us all the addresses of where you want them sent to all the children. We will do it and tell them that was from you being on the Oprah show. And that was the most beautiful gift, among others, that they provided. But yes, we started getting so many boxes and all of that that came to my home, that came to our reading center. It was overwhelming for a while, but the best overwhelming, you know, that I've ever had.
And what were some of the lessons learned as you go back, if you were advising someone, and I know you do this now that you're a coach for individuals as well as purpose-driven leaders, if you were advising someone right now who was finding their purpose and who had landed on something that they wanted to pursue, based on what you've experienced, what words of advice would you give them?
Trust yourself, number one. If that voice, your heart, is speaking to you and it feels like it fits you perfectly, that's your purpose. Trust it. Don't talk yourself out of it. Take the steps. And I go through, you know, steps and things like that, but that's the number one advice. It doesn't also, I say, like I said before, it doesn't have to be you jump in and risk everything. There's a slide method that I teach to bring it into your life while you are continuing the life you have to sustain you. If you have family, you know, I didn't have those responsibilities. But people, of course, do. And after this pandemic, of course, it's scary. But it's also that time we've come out of that reflective time. So that voice in you is, you know, dying to get out. So there's a slide method and a jump method if you are a jump type of person. So those two things. The universe is incredibly powerful, but it comes out strongest when you are listening to your inner voice, when you are on purpose. You get coincidences, you know, even miracles. You can make a vision board. I teach how to do that. I'm looking at mine as we speak. Of course, Oprah was on mine early on. My husband teaches meditation. Meditation was and is a way to just calm yourself down and just ask for help. It doesn't necessarily come in the 20 minutes you're meditating, but it comes. And the last thing I always teach is we're not alone. We have each other. You know, I've heard it, and I've heard it growing up, and I've heard it when I started Pajama Program, and it was growing, and you know, people were so supportive. You know, the power of one. Look, you did it. Look what power of one can do. It just takes one person. But Deborah, I've learned in all these years, it's not the power of one that changes things. It's the power of one another that moves mountains and moves people. And that human connection is a godsend. We have to embrace it.
I love that, the power of one another, and that there's more than one way to implement your purpose. I'm a jumper. I'm not a slider. I was a jumper. Once I got the message, it was like, really? I looked up at God, the universe, and I said, really? Do you know how much money I make? And, you know, it was just like, once you're seeking your purpose and you get your answer, you have no choice but to fulfill that mission. So Genevieve, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you here today and learning about your journey. I'm such a huge fan. I'll find a way to get involved in the Pajama Program. But how can our listeners get in touch with you? Because what I know for sure, to borrow a line from Oprah, is that 5 million women lost their jobs in the pandemic last year. And 1.8 million, as of last month, are still unemployed. And I know from the conversations I'm having, there's a huge population of women executives and leaders who are looking for that purpose. And if they resonated with your story today and would like to connect with you, to work with you, how would they do that?
Sure. Of course, I'd love to talk to anybody. And, you know, just listen to what's going on in their heart and their head at the moment. They can reach me at GenevievePeturo.com. My email's Jen@GenevievePeturo.com.
And we'll put that in the show notes, too, so you don't have to spell it.
Yes. Okay. So that's the best way to reach out to me. I'm putting together a conference, Find Your Pajamas, or your conference for the fall in person. And I can answer questions. You know, when I'm not revealing the details just yet, but they can certainly ask me about it, and I'll give them as much information right now as I have, or we can just talk about what's on their mind.
That's beautiful. So we'll put your connection in the show notes. And Genevieve, it's been such a sincere pleasure to get to know you. It was accidental. We found ourselves on the same Zoom call, and I said, yes. I know about your organization. I've heard about the Pajama Program, and I'm so glad that we've had this time to chat.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
Oh, such, it's my pleasure. And I know this is just the first of many opportunities for us to collaborate together, I'm sure. And with that, my friends, that's it for now. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.